Seneca 24, AD 59, matricide, the death of Agrippina. Hi everyone, and welcome back to this podcast series on the life of Lucius Annaeus Seneca. Okay, it's now spring AD 59. Seneca has been on the back foot for a while now, as the gaping discrepancy between his sanctimonious literary output and his real-life shenanigans involving depravity, luxurious living, and the stockpiling of riches beyond count continues to stir public and political resentment against him. His De Vita Beata, or On the Happy Life, discussed in the last podcast in this series, a book through which Seneca had launched a brilliant self-exculpatory counterattack against his political enemies, was enough to buy him some breathing space. But for how long the brittle truce that that work had won for him would last, well, that was anybody's guess. This new year, AD 59, would prove a watershed in so many ways. It would see Nero's reckless megalomania and abuse of power careen even more wildly out of control than it already was. It would see Seneca and his colleague Burrus, the praetorian commander, madly scrabbling along in the emperor's destructive wake, attempting to mitigate or clean up the mess he was creating. And it would also see the death of the great Agrippina, sister of one emperor, wife of the next, and mother to the incumbent. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. In order to understand why things came to the dreadful pass that they did in March of AD 59, we need first to take a look at what was simmering in that pot of intrigue and treachery that was the imperial court. The ancient commentators write about the events of early AD 59 with varying degrees of detail and sensationalism, but I think that there are some common threads we need to pull at to give us some idea of whether Seneca was implicit or complicit in some or all of what was about to unfold that fateful spring. Now, the first of these threads is to do with Poppaea Sabina. I made brief mention of the beautiful and wily Poppaea a couple of podcasts ago. She was a Roman patrician woman who had been introduced to Nero's court and with whom the licentious young emperor had become instantly smitten. In early AD 59, Nero was still officially married to Claudia Octavia, the daughter of the Emperor Claudius and that emperor's former wife, Messalina. That situation, of course, had not prevented the young rake from playing the field and taking a multitude of lovers and mistresses. But the ambitious Poppaea had aspirations way above that of becoming just another notch on Nero's headboard. In her mind, the top job, that of empress, should be hers. But to make that happen, Poppaea had some obstacles to overcome, and she must have made some kind of direct appeal to Nero to get rid of his wife and marry her instead, and she was obviously turned down, because it's reported that she accused Nero of having no balls when he refused to do what she asked. And this leads us to Agrippina. By early AD 59, Agrippina had lost much of her former influence, and pretty much the only card she had left in her hand was an affinity and allegiance with poor Octavia, Nero's wife, to whom she was stepmother and mother-in-law. Poppaea realised that Agrippina would never allow Nero to divorce Octavia. So for Poppaea, the solution was simple. Agrippina had to go. And it's just a short step to realising that from this point on, Poppaea would have been pouring poison into Nero's ear about his own mother. When Agrippina got wind of this, and with very little left to lose, it's highly likely that she decided to collapse the whole rotten house of cards, and she went for broke by putting about rumours that she was having an incestuous relationship with her son. She knew that if those rumours were to reach and be believed by the army, then they, not willing to tolerate what was essentially sacrilege, would bring Nero down. And if not the army, then the rumours could give rise to conspiracies and plots against the emperor's life. And who knew what a resourceful and ambitious woman like Agrippina might salvage from the aftermath of a deposed or assassinated Nero. And this all leads us on to Seneca. Now, let's stop for a moment and take stock of what could be going through Seneca's head in early AD 59. He's recently been the victim of a massive character assassination attempt, and the only two things that had kept him from being taken down by his enemies were his literary dexterity and his exalted political position as Nero's closest advisor. So at this point in time, Seneca still needed Nero. If Nero were to fall, Seneca would fall with him. So the very last thing Seneca needed was for Nero to be dethroned by his own troops. He therefore acted quickly. He sent in the ex-slave Acte, one of Nero's trusted mistresses, to warn the emperor what Agrippina was up to. And from that began a concerted campaign to rid the Roman world of the once formidable Julia Agrippina, known to history as Agrippina the Younger. Now, does this mean then that Seneca was complicit in all that was to follow? In my opinion, he very likely was, and if not complicit, then he was most certainly implicit. Cassius Dio, another of the more reliable ancient commentators, refers to dependable sources as inferring that Seneca was up to his eyeballs in all the plotting and treachery that was to come. In fact, he actively accuses Seneca of being the main driver behind it. Either, he says, because Seneca was fed up of being accused of incest with Agrippina himself, or because he was trying to incite Nero into a campaign of bloodshed and murder to increase that emperor's unpopularity and maybe hasten Nero's own end. Now, there are a lot of implications in that latter consideration, including the one that Seneca may even then have been eyeing the top job, the throne, for himself. But that's a discussion I'm going to have to leave for a future podcast, because there's a lot more consideration we need to make around it. So how did Nero and Seneca, and I'm going to throw in the Praetorian commander Burrus here as well for reasons that will become obvious soon, how did this lot go about removing the Agrippina piece from the imperial chessboard? Well, if the ancient commentators are to be believed, poison was not an option. Firstly, because after the relatively recent deaths of Claudius and Britannicus through suspected poisoning, another imperial murder would have been one too many for the public to swallow. And secondly, it is said that Agrippina was protected against poison by a preventative course of antidotes she is reported to have taken. Outright assassination by stabbing was also off the cards, as Agrippina was still a public figure around the city of Rome, and apprehension of the culprit and subsequent exposure of those responsible was far too big a risk to take. So what Nero, Seneca and co. came up with to be rid once and for all of the troublesome ex-empress was a plan that could have come straight out of a Disney movie. They decided to make it look like a drowning accident, and what follows, despite being truly bizarre and bordering on farcical, is too well documented and was too widely reported to be a story fabricated for gullible readers of later generations. Enlisting the services of one Anicetus, commander of the Roman fleet at Misenum, which is a naval base in the Gulf of Puteoli, modern Puzzuoli, the conspirators had a ship prepared that was jury-rigged to fall apart whilst at sea and throw the concussed Agrippina into the roiling waters. This shipwreck, in inverted commas, was planned for around the Festival of Minerva at Baiae, just 5-odd kilometres north of Misenum, which in AD 59 fell between the 19th and the 23rd of March. Nero had invited his mother to the resort town, that's Baiae, under the pretense of a reconciliation with her. Upon her arrival from Antium, that's modern Anzio, further up the coast towards Rome, she was greeted warmly by her son and taken to a mansion at Bauli before being invited to board the sumptuous but sabotaged ship prepared for her to sail back to dinner at Baiae. Some say that Agrippina was warned that the ship was not a safe option, or maybe she was just too astute to trust her son too completely at that stage, but she refused boarding and opted instead to be carried by sedan chair to the resort town of Baiae. Whatever her misgivings though, Nero appears to have allayed them at the banquet that evening. By all accounts, he was a most attentive and charming host. After being wined, dined, and no doubt flattered and made empty promises to, Agrippina boarded the deadly ship, accompanied by her two companions, a man, Creperius Gallus, and a woman, Acheronia. The night, it seems, was clear and starlit, and the sea was calm, so it was hardly ideal conditions in which to fake a shipwreck unseen from the nearby shore. The ship sailed out, and then suddenly the signal was given for the trap to be sprung. The roof of the ship, driven downwards with heavy lead weights, fell in upon its passengers. Creperius, Agrippina's male companion, was crushed and killed instantly. Agrippina and her female companion, Acheronia, were saved by the sturdy sides of a couch which remained intact under the huge weight above. They remained alive and unscathed, and to make matters worse for the would-be conspirators, the ship was still holding together, afloat on the water. Beginning to panic now, the would-be murderers threw their weight to one side of the vessel in an attempt to capsize it, but the exercise took too long, and all it managed to do was afford Agrippina and Acheronia the opportunity to slip gently and quietly into the placid waters. And it was at that point that Acheronia made her mistake. Whether in an attempt to distract attention away from the escaping Agrippina, or an ill-advised gambit to save her own backside, she began to cry out, "I am Agrippina! Help! Help the Emperor's mother!" But all this achieved was to attract the attention of the conspirators, who then repeatedly bashed poor old Acheronia to death with oars, poles, and anything else that came to hand. In all the excitement, Agrippina herself had sustained only a shoulder wound, and she managed to swim to some sailing boats who took her to shore. Now, this is where it gets a little strange, because the ancient commentators report that Agrippina was first put on shore at the Lucrine Lake, that's the Lucrinus Lacus, that is, separated by a very narrow strip of land from the open waters of the Gulf of Puzzuoli, and from there she was taken home. Now Agrippina was, there is no doubt in my mind, an extremely smart woman, and she would, in my opinion, have put two and two together very, very quickly that Nero was behind all of this. Tacitus implies that it was only when she finally arrived home that she realised the whole thing had been a plot. But for Agrippina, the penny would surely have dropped as soon as the ship started to fall apart. And it's testament to her ability to think on her feet in a perilous situation that she realised the only way she had any chance of surviving this episode would be to pretend openly to her son that the whole thing had been nothing but an unfortunate accident. By doing so, she would be openly broadcasting to Nero that although she was fully aware of his nefarious attempt to kill her, she would give him the chance of getting off the hook by pretending that the whole thing was just another unfortunate accident at sea. So she sent a message to her son to that effect, and, to buy herself a little extra time, asked him not to come to visit while she recuperated from the experience. She used that time to treat her shoulder wound and order that Acheronius, the companion who died in the waters with her, she ordered that her will be found and her property protected. Now there's evidence right there that Agrippina knew full well that everything was beginning to fall apart. Now meanwhile, when the news that Agrippina had survived the assassination attempt was reported to Nero through his own sources, he panicked, fearing she might arm her slaves or raise an army or use the episode to turn the Senate against him. And it's very telling that his first reaction was to awaken and summon Seneca and Burrus. And that confirms to me that those two had been involved in the scheme from day one. Seneca, of course, was now caught between a rock and a hard place. According to the ancient commentator Tacitus, his first reaction was to ask Burrus, commander of the Praetorian Guard, whether they should go in and finish the job of doing in Agrippina. Burrus's reply was to point out that that approach would be too risky, as the Imperial Guard were equally loyal to all of the great Germanicus's descendants, and that included Agrippina, daughter of the late and still lamented general. So they decided to lob the job back into the lap of Anicetus, the naval officer. He was told to take with him only men he could trust to obey his orders to the letter, and they were dispatched to Agrippina's villa. And at that point, the whole thing descended into farce. The messenger sent by Agrippina offering Nero a face-saving way out arrived, but it was too late, because Anicetus and his men were already en route to finish off Agrippina. So, in a spontaneous performance of improvised and feigned shock, Nero threw a sword at Agrippina's messenger's feet and accused him of having been sent by Agrippina as part of a plot against the life of the emperor. And to muddy and confuse things still further, news of Agrippina's shipwreck survival had spread out to the general public, who, believing the whole episode to have been nothing more than an accident, swarmed to the seashore. And when it was revealed she had survived the ordeal, there was much rejoicing. Now that situation for the conspirators could not be allowed to escalate. So an armed column of men dispersed the crowd, while Anicetus, with his hand-chosen detachment, surrounded Agrippina's house and then burst inside. Most of Agrippina's slaves fled. Those that remained were arrested. A single maid remained by her mistress's side. But as Anicetus and his men broke into Agrippina's chamber, she too fled, leaving this remarkable woman, daughter of Germanicus, sister, wife, and mother to emperors, to face her fate alone. Agrippina was no fool. As soon as she saw that it was not the messenger she herself had sent to Nero, but Anicetus who had returned, she knew that, for her, the end had come. Tacitus names the three assassins as Anicetus, Hercules, and Obaritus. As they closed in on Agrippina, she made one last attempt to convince them that she did not hold her son responsible for what had happened on the sabotaged ship. But it was all in vain. First, Hercules coshed her over the head with a truncheon, after which Obaritus drew his sword to strike the killing blow, and in a last gesture of defiance against the son she had borne, and whom she now knew without doubt had ordered her killed, Agrippina pointed to the area of her womb. "Strike here," she is reported to have cried out. "Strike here." And they did, blow after blow, until the great lady, Agrippina, lay dead in a pool of her own blood. There are reports that Nero, upon viewing his mother's corpse later that night, made a crass comment about what a good figure she still had, although not even the ancient commentators will categorically state that that very poorly judged comment actually happened. In all events, Nero obviously wanted rid of the evidence, so he had Agrippina cremated that very same night, and while he still reigned, refused to grant her the dignity of a proper tomb. That job was left to the former empress's remaining servants. And it's also said that Agrippina would not have been surprised at the end that overtook her. An astrologer had once told her that Nero would one day become emperor, but she was also told that he would kill his own mother. Agrippina's reply had been, "Let him kill me, provided he becomes emperor." So Agrippina's murder was the signal for Seneca and Burrus to leap into damage control mode. Burrus had the senior officers of the Imperial Guard very openly and visibly come to Nero and congratulate him on surviving the unforeseen plot on his life by his mother, while it was most likely Seneca who corralled all of Nero's cronies into a public demonstration giving thanks for the salvation of their emperor, and this all took place in the various temples. And taking this lead, the nearby Campanian towns expressed their own joy at Nero's deliverance from the alleged evil plot, with sacrifices and delegations uttering fine words. Nero himself assumed a demeanour suitable for a grief-struck son. We must remember he was an avid fan of drama in its many forms, but he also decided to slope off to Naples while the worst of the dust settled. And it was at that point in the whole tragic mess that Seneca made a mistake. Convincing Nero that it would help his cause, Seneca composed for him a letter to the Senate. It followed the narrative improvised on the night of the murder, that is, that the messenger Agrippina had sent to Nero after the shipwreck was an assassin who had been apprehended with sword in hand, and Agrippina had subsequently paid the price for her treason. The letter that Seneca compiled for Nero went on to accuse Agrippina of interfering at the very highest level of Roman politics. It said that she hated everyone, army, senate, even the people themselves, because she had been unable to get her way and rule as co-regent with her son. There were, furthermore, accusations of political interference by Agrippina during the reign of Nero's predecessor, Claudius. All in all, the letter concluded, the shipwreck, although accidental, had been providential as one of the events that led up to her death, something which Seneca's Stylus called a national blessing. But the Senate and people were not stupid. They knew there was no way a single assassin could have been sent against the well-guarded house of the emperor that night, especially not immediately after the woman who was supposed to have sent him had, only hours before, survived a shipwreck. Besides, everyone knew that it was Seneca and not Nero himself who had composed the letter. And Seneca had a long history of writing pieces designed to show his erstwhile pupil in a better light and get him off the hook after otherwise embarrassing and incriminating circumstances. For many, the death of Agrippina, coming as it did a few years after that of Nero's stepfather Claudius and stepbrother Britannicus, was one parricide too many. And Seneca was pointed out as the man who was trying to blow a smokescreen over the whole sordid debacle. And there was one senator at least, who saw straight through it. We've mentioned Thrasea Paetus before, but only in passing. Paetus was a senator of the old school, a man who seems to have adhered to the tenets of the Stoic philosophical school far more credibly than Seneca was hypocritically trumpeting himself as doing. Paetus was stolid, straightforward, and principled, something that made him stand out from the toadying crowd of sycophants who typified the senates of Nero's reign. Having sat through the travesty that he knew Nero's letter to be, he, along with the other senators, was asked to give his assent to a form of blackwashing Agrippina's name, things such as including her birthday as one of Rome's dates of ill omen, and passing official motions congratulating Nero. And that was too much for Paetus. His normal reaction to senatorial events and motions with which he didn't agree was to remain silent. But this time he got up and walked out of the curia. But Paetus was a rare exception to those too intimidated by Nero's track record and Seneca's bullshit to stand up and at least make a token gesture of defiance. And again, it was probably Seneca who orchestrated Nero's ostensible triumphal return to Rome from Campania. It was in all likelihood he who organised the townsfolk en route and marshalled the senators and tribes of Rome to come out in their finery and hail their triumphal emperor as, on his return to the city proper, Nero made his way to the Capitol to celebrate his salvation before the gods themselves. And so, what do we think of Seneca now? Everything is beginning to unravel around him. And how did he feel about his part in the murder of his one-time patroness? Did he try to convince himself that it was necessary? Some sort of unavoidable political assassination that was essential if the ship of state were to continue sailing smoothly? Or did he participate in the sordid affair because of some personal agenda? After all, Agrippina no longer being there removed a whole slew of potentially awkward questions about past loyalties and alliances. From where I sit, it seems to me likely that Seneca would have been nothing without Agrippina. If it were she who had persuaded a Caligula, envious of Seneca's oratorical skills, not to kill him back in that emperor's reign, then she had saved his life, and it was Agrippina who had Seneca recalled from exile, elevated him up the political and senatorial ranks, and made him tutor to her son. He owed everything he was to her. So does that make Seneca a disloyal, hypocritical coward? Well, we've still a way to go in the life story of Lucius Annaeus Seneca, even though Agrippina has now bailed out of it. So let's maybe hold off final judgment until we've heard everything. But if you want my opinion on his involvement in the murder of Agrippina, then I will share with you that I personally do not think it was Seneca's finest hour. Not at all. The next podcast will continue on with the events of AD 59 and the fallout from Agrippina's murder, of which there were many. So I really do hope to see you all there. Thank you.